Hi, this is Dr. Joe Vitale. Welcome to the Awakened Relationship Program. In this program, I'm going to discuss how to get the most from your personal and business relationships. So let's jump right in so you too can have an awakened relationship.
So, Joe, would you describe what an awakened relationship is?
An awakened relationship is completely based on love. You have to understand that there's at least four stages of awakening. In the first, most people are a victim, and in that relationship, it's not very healthy. In the second stage of awakening, they feel empowered. A relationship can be very strong and very challenging and very growth-oriented because of this empowerment. But sooner or later, it evolves into the third stage, which is about surrender. And you're not surrendering to the other person in that relationship. You're surrendering to what I call the divine. You're surrendering to a higher power. In the fourth stage, which is where you and I are headed, you are awake. In an awakened relationship, you are coming from love. You are, in fact, love. And the other person is coming from love and is, in fact, love. In an awakened relationship, when you look at the other person, you see only love. And if that person is coming from an awakened relationship, they look at you and they too see only love. Love is the nature and the description of an awakened relationship.
And speaking of love, do most people have what we would consider real friends, true friends? What in the world is a true friend?
I don't think most people have true friends. And that might seem sad. It might seem startling. But one definition of a true friend is, and I've heard this from a famous speaker, if you were, by some crazed situation, locked in a prison in some third world country, which of your friends would run to the rescue? Which of them would stop everything, go to the other side of the world if needed, and break you out, set you free? When you have that kind of a definition, most of us don't have a true friend. We have acquaintances, we have coworkers, we have neighbors, we have people that we see from time to time, we have people that we like hanging around with. But having somebody who has your utmost well-being in mind, including your entire life in mind, is probably rare. However, when you come from an awakened relationship, you tend to come from love within you, and from that perspective, you attract to you loving friends. A real friend, in my opinion, is somebody who is totally supporting you, your well-being, your life goals, and has your highest best interest in mind. And you have theirs in mind as well.
Joe, we're talking about love and relationships and those who care about us and those who are our true friends. What about negative people? What about whiny people? What about a life partner who's complaining and whining and negative? What do you do about that? How do you deal with that?
Well, you know, depending on what stage of awakening you are in, you will at times pull into your life negative, whiny, and sometimes victim-oriented life partners. This is only because they are representing a part of you. In the Jungian psychology understanding, they are the shadow side of you. Now, if you've never heard this before, it's going to be very confusing to hear for the first time. It's the idea that the other person that you're complaining about, the negative person, the whiny person, the person that you think is acting like a victim, is actually representing a part of you that feels the same way. So in a very real way, the relationship you attracted is a relationship that is within you. So the first way to heal this is to actually heal your own relationship with yourself. You have to take complete responsibility and look at the negative, the whiny, the victim as representing a mindset within you. As you own it, as you release it, and as you become more awakened and more empowered, they will either change or they will leave because the energy within you is no longer attracting them.
I've known friends who remind me of a yin-yang situation where they just seem like polar opposites when they first come together, and then I seem to notice a mutually beneficial situation arriving where they complement one another in strange and different ways. Do relationships have to be mutually beneficial to last?
Relationships are always mutually beneficial or they end. If you're not getting something from the other person and that person isn't getting something from you, the party's over. Sometimes relationships may start a little bumpy, and as they get to know each other and as they clean up their unconscious beliefs about relationship and love and deservingness, things smooth out. Generally, they'll stay together and have a nice time together. But at any point, at any time, in either person, if they feel like they're not getting any more benefit, they will most likely stop the music and move on.
And is there a key to creating a lasting, intimate relationship?
The key to having a lasting, intimate relationship is, again, based on love. What is love? Love is the mutual understanding, the total non-judgmental acceptance of the other person and yourself. Love has no bounds. Love has no judgment. Love is coming from clarity, from light, from peace, from happiness. In order to have this ideal relationship, whether at work or at home, you have to see the love in the other person. You have to see the love within you. An awakened relationship, again, is based on and is love.
Should complete honesty be a part of that love? We all seem to have little secrets, little thoughts, little things we harbor from the other person in a relationship. Is that good or is that bad or what is that?
Sigmund Freud said, the number one way to stay mentally healthy is to have no secrets. I think there's a profound truth in that. I think there's a profound healing that comes from having no secrets. I believe being completely honest with the other person, more importantly, with yourself, is the number one key to having an awakened relationship in your life in any and all areas. It may be uncomfortable, but a long time ago, a book was written about ruthless honesty. And they discovered that when people are ruthlessly honest with themselves about their past, about forgiveness, about what they want, they brought peace into their lives and into their relationships. Having no secrets is a key and a direct path to the awakened relationship. Okay, I now want to share an extra special interview. It's called the Awakening Interview. I was asked many questions about many different subjects, and I think you're going to find this fascinating. Sit back and relax as Teresa and I have this wonderful conversation, an awakened relationship itself, all about awakening.
This is Teresa Pushkar, and I have the distinct pleasure of sitting across from Dr. Joe Vitale. Joe Vitale is graced to have a worldwide support network in the work that he does. He receives extensive emails from all over the world, has a blog site, Facebook site, and a miracles coaching network that is second to none. With all of these realms of support and spiritual advice, Joe gets constant questions on a regular basis. We're going to take an opportunity now to answer some of those burning questions that many of his students ask on a very regular basis. To begin, Joe, I struggle in my personality self in that it seems to have so much catching up to do. It doesn't seem to ever be parallel to my soul self, and it's very discouraging. How can I find peace in this discrepancy?
Well, that's a great question. First of all, you want to accept wherever you are, because when you fight with it, you make it worse. So resistance will just make it persist. What you want to do is, as much as possible, focus on the moment, focus on being in the here and now, and actually focus on what you're calling your soul. Your personality self, your ego self, will never, ever catch up to your soul self. It's not supposed to. It's actually supposed to be in service of the divine part of you, which is what you're calling your soul. So I would say just take a deep breath and surrender to that. Maybe meditate on the fact that you are not your ego, you are not your thoughts, you are not your body, you are not your emotions. You're actually the soul, the witness behind all of it. And breathe into that and realize that the divine will speak to you, and your personality self is supposed to simply follow what the divine says. So when you try to lead from the ego perspective, you're actually causing a lot of frustration, and that's what you're feeling right now. I would say let go of that. Let go of that completely. And just look within and follow the divine. That's leading you home. That's leading you to an awakening.
That brings to mind another issue. A lot of spiritual teachers describe the ego as almost the enemy or something we want to annihilate, that negative. And what comes up for me is that negative creates resistance or some kind of wall. And, you know, you hear that common phrase, you've got to embrace the ego. It's a real struggle. Can you provide me with some clarity on that?
The ego is your friend. That's the best way I can sum it up, is that your ego is here to help you survive. None of us are here without an ego. An ego is perfectly fine to have. You just don't want your ego to be in control and your ego driving the bus of your life, because it's going to hit walls and it's going to hit other buses. It's going to have accidents. So your ego is not to be demolished. You need it to get through life. You need it to be able to cash a check. You need it to be able to drive your car. It's your friend. That's really the bottom line here. It's simply that, and I keep repeating this, but it's so essential. The ego needs to be in service of the divine. The divine is the one driving the bus, driving the ship, driving the planet, and you simply want to be servant to it.
Speaking of driving the bus, I'm thinking of children. Hmm. I'm thinking of young children don't seem to have a heck of a lot of ego, and we seem to train them into ego. Is there a way that your message can be conveyed to our children?
I actually think it's the other way around. I actually think the children are the purest, most divine little beings that they are. They're closer to Source. They just came out of being at Source. So they are learning to have an ego. They are learning how to survive in life. And we probably need to sit and study them and see how they play, how they interact, see the light that's still on in their eyes, see how their heart says, let's go do this, let's go play with this, let's go make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich out of the dog. Let's go do something that's fun, because they're simply being creative. So I would say, instead of trying to change the children, we should be studying them and saying, what qualities do these divine little beings have that we can adapt and bring into our lives right now as adults?
So I guess on that note, you're also saying that we have to kind of separate ourselves or not attach ourselves to, quote, protecting our children.
Well, I do think we need to protect our children, because they came into the world with a little bit of a victim consciousness, because they're taking on our programming and the culture's programming. And we need to tell them what a bus is, what a train is, what a car is, what a dangerous area might be, just to help them be aware. We're training their egos. Again, we all have egos, and those are necessary for survival. And a little child doesn't quite have all of those survival skills and social skills. So I don't think there's anything wrong with trying to lend a hand and teaching them and preparing them and leading and educating them.
Sometimes I find it's difficult to discern my fears. You know, for example, even the children, I can get caught up in, oh my God, I'm going to take her to the schoolyard and I'm terrified that she's going to hurt herself on the monkey bars. And I'm trying to discern a sense of knowing or that intuitive from the sense of fear. Is there a way that I can easily discern one from the other?
Well, it sounds like you're pretty clear about what fear is. I would focus more on what you want. So when you focus on fear, you're going to attract more fear. You attract more fear conscious thoughts. You attract more fear feelings within you. And you can attract more fearful experiences because of where you began with this. So I would take a deep breath and focus on, what do I want? I want my child and myself to be safe and playful and inspiring and inspired. I want to be able to take her or him to the playground and have fun there. I want to be able to smile and talk to the other people and see him or her play with the other kids. And I would focus on just how good that feels. Because when you focus on what you want, you tend to expand that and attract that. This is a basic rule of psychology, and I've said it before in the Awakening course, you get more of whatever you focus on. So focus on what you want, not on what you're worried about. Again, because whatever you focus on, you'll attract.
Well, taking that jump then to business, there's some huge decisions we have to make, and many of us tend to be very risk averse. There can be a sense in the head of, I better not do this. It could be dangerous. And it's hard at times to distinguish that intuitive gut feeling from, I am just so in fear because this could be a huge change or a shift in my life.
Well, there's that subject of fear again. Doesn't it show up just about everywhere? Isn't that interesting? I would say the fear is coming from that first stage of being a victim. We are afraid because we're afraid we're going to get hurt. We're going to lose money. We're going to lose face. We're going to lose our investment. We're not going to be proud of ourselves. And this is a great joke, too, because I've learned from a billionaire, a guy who had failed many times. He had declared bankruptcy at one point, and he's now a billionaire. And he told me, he says, I learned something great from fear and from failure. And I said, well, what in the world was that? He said, when you fail, nothing bad happens to you. Nothing bad happens to you. He said, the world forgets and the world forgives. He says, the person it's hardest on is you. You beat yourself up for what the apparent failure is, but you can learn. The failure is feedback. As you get that feedback, you can adapt, you can learn, you can move forward. So being afraid of making a decision in business or anywhere else is actually going to slow you down. It's going to inhibit you from taking any action whatsoever. And you will never, ever know what's going to work or not because the fear is going to lock you into a victim mentality and you won't move forward. I have found, and I've said it many times, that when you face your fears, you usually find your wealth, that your wealth is behind the thing you fear. Something that you fear to do is probably something you have to do. My rule of thumb is, if there's something I'm afraid of doing, and it could have been my first public speaking event, it could have been when I wanted to release spiritual marketing as a book, when I was afraid of doing it, it's because my ego was afraid of being hurt. But when I faced my fear, and I did it anyway, those became life-changing events. In my very first talk, I was very young. There were six people in the room. I was so nervous, I leaned against the wall because I thought I was going to pass out and slide to the floor. I repeatedly faced my fears until now I appear on Larry King, Donnie Deutsch, on stage before Donald Trump, doing things that I never thought I would do before. One of the highlights for me was I was a keynote speaker for the National Speakers Association, and I had 5,000 professional speakers in the audience listening to me, and I got a standing ovation at the end of it. Now, my point is, I never would have gotten to that place had I not faced my fears in the beginning. I also remind people that fear doesn't mean don't take action. Fear is kind of an alert that you're about to do something you haven't done before. So just be aware. You're about to go into business or buy a stock or open a restaurant. Who knows what it might be. But because you haven't done it before, you're a little uneasy about it. But that uneasiness isn't fear. It's the uncomfort that comes from doing something that's a stretch for you. So I say again, take a deep breath, look within and say, is this really something that's a life or death situation? Should I really be afraid that I'm going to lose my life if I go forward? Or am I only uneasy because I'm stretching my comfort zone? And if it's stretching your comfort zone, face your fear and do it.
While we're talking about business and stretching ourselves, I'm thinking about the world and how we're all feeling very stretched. Everything's rush, rush, rush. Our nervous systems are feeling like they're maxed. What would you say, based on the four stages and the work that you do, this is all about? And how do I deal with this sense of rush and anxiety and hurriedness in my life today?
Well, the sense of being rushed right now and feeling the stress of the world is actually coming from the first stage. It's being a victim. It's the whole world that's bearing down on me and making me feel like I have no control. I can't get anything done. I'm going to go crazy here. There's no time. There's not enough money. There's not enough anything. Not enough energy. Well, that's being a victim. And so, again, realizing that that's the first stage is okay. You wake up from it and you move into another stage. When you feel more empowered, for example, you start to imagine that, well, maybe if I took a few minutes every day to relax, maybe if I learned how to take 3 deep breaths as I go about my day, maybe as I learn to close my eyes for just a couple minutes before I make my next phone call, maybe as I learn to meditate every day or to work out every day or to do some walking every day, maybe to get a massage once a week or once a month, whatever's possible for you, you realize you have more control than you ever thought possible. So you start to move into this relaxed mentality that says the world might be driving itself crazy, but you don't have to drive yourself crazy. That you can actually take care of yourself, love yourself, pamper yourself, while still getting things done. So again, for me, it's realizing what stage of awareness are you in. If you've awakened to being a victim, that's fine, but you can take control and move into the next stage of awakening and actually feel like you're empowered and start to use some of those techniques to help you feel like you're getting things done at your own time and your own pace. And I have to remind you, in stage three, you surrender. In stage three, you're talking to the divine and saying, look, I can't handle all the stress. I can't handle all the busyness. I can't handle all the activity that's going on in the world. There's a wonderful healing technique from Hawaii called Ho'oponopono. You don't have to remember the long word. Basically, it's a simple technique where you take complete responsibility for everything in your life, you forgive everybody in your life, and you love everybody in your life, beginning with yourself. So, I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you, and I love you, as a clearing and cleansing technique to help you get to a place of being at peace in this moment. When you're in this moment, it's funny, but all the busyness of the world isn't really busy.
Thank you. We're talking about the busyness of the moment, and I'm thinking about women, mothers. There seems to be an epidemic of, I can't take care of myself. I've got to take care of everyone else. Now, I have my own issues around that. And then there's mass consciousness and the world issues around that, where we've seen generations of women before us have been sacrificing themselves for their family. Now, I feel like I'm trying to break free not only of my own issues, but those generational issues that are existing. Do you have any suggestions or advice for how I might do that?
Yeah, I do. There's a couple thoughts that come to mind. First of all, you just spoke a belief. There's a belief that keeps getting restated and reactivated in women. And it's the thing that they have to do everything, or they don't have the power, or they have to give in to somebody else. There's this whole mindset that if you listen closely, it does have a victim mindset to it. But the victim mindset is coming around because of a belief. So I say, first of all, do the little belief clearing exercise I talked about in session two, I believe, where I said you can question the belief. Like, do I really believe that I have to do everything? Do I really believe I have to do what all women have done before me? And as you question it, you find out what the evidence is for that belief. And almost certainly, this is a belief that has been handed down to you. You didn't consciously choose this when you were a young girl. It's something that came along a little later. And when you realize that you chose this belief, you can let it go and replace it with something more empowering. You can also do something like the clearing technique where you say, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, and thank you. You're doing the self-identity Ho'oponopono technique on that belief, but more importantly, on any and all beliefs that may be related to it. You don't have to know what the beliefs are that are giving you this feeling. But when you have the feeling, go ahead and hold on to it for a moment and look towards the divine or towards God, whatever is right for you, and say, I'm sorry. I don't know where this feeling came from. I don't know where this belief came from. Please forgive me for whatever role I played in creating this unconsciously in my life. And thank you for taking care of it. Thank you for releasing it. Thank you for clearing and cleansing it. And then ending with, as I like to do, I love you. That strong statement of love to the divine, you being the divine, saying I love you to the divine. This in and of itself can clear that belief and all related beliefs so that you start to feel like I have power and I can do what I need to do when I need to do it.
As you talk beliefs, I'm thinking of the next question and thinking, uh-oh, here's a belief. The struggle of the partner. I so believe in the work you do and I've been practicing it. However, my partner, my husband, my wife, doesn't necessarily buy in or isn't on the same path as me. And I struggle with this.
Well, notice what you just said. I struggle with this. This is the ego against outer circumstances one more time. And it means that there's the victim mentality going on. Now, this isn't bad. We all slide between these different stages until we get to the fourth stage and we're actually awakened. So it's not unusual to fall in certain areas into a victim thought pattern. And that's what's going on here. So again, I would say you want to look at the beliefs that would create that. You want to use the self-identity Ho'oponopono to clear that. And more importantly, realize that whatever you're looking at, this other person or any other person, is actually a mirror projection of what you're feeling within yourself. The outer anything is a reflection of your internal state of mind. So if there's somebody on the outside, whether it's your partner or your boss, who is feeling like you're not making any sense, I'm not on the same page as you, that in some way, shape, or form there's a miscommunication, they actually represent a part of you that feels that way. Now, that's a biggie. We're talking about the shadow side of your life. We're talking about the part you don't actually want to look at. But when you own that, you can change that. What I do is look, and if somebody has said something to me that I thought was irritating or I didn't like, I have to look within myself and say, does some part of me believe that? And if I'm very honest, I realize that, yeah, there's what we would call a sub-personality that believes that whatever that person said is actually true for me. And they voiced it. And it's irritating me because I didn't want to see it. I didn't want to believe it. I didn't want to own it. So instead of dealing with that outer person, I deal with that inner self within me. I may have a dialogue with it. I may ask it, why do you believe what you believe? Why are you saying that? And I do it until I get to a place of peace and serenity. And when I do, son of a gun, that outer person that was objecting is no longer objecting. That outer person is now at peace too. How did they change? Because I changed on the inside, and they were a reflection of my inside.
Could that not, though, then be an ego trap of our own? If I just keep doing my work and keep telling myself and keep cleaning and clearing this, that somehow I'm going to convince my husband to get out of his lack consciousness, for example.
Well, actually, that is what you are doing. The more you work on yourself, you change the other person and the world itself. This is why I tell people, if you want world peace, you begin by finding peace within you. I've often said that if you want the planet to be healthy, wealthy, and wise, contribute one healthy, wealthy, and wise person to it. You. You work on yourself, and as you work on yourself, yes, your husband changes or leaves, or the people around you change or leave, or the planet changes, or in somehow you don't become a part of what's going on. It all rearranges itself compared to what's going on within you. You do have far more control than what you ever imagined before. You work on the inside, it changes the outside.
While we're talking about the planet, there's a lot going on right now, a lot of fear, a lot of natural disasters. Based on the work you've done and the four stages, what's your call on what's going on the planet?
Well, we're creating anything and everything with group consciousness. That actually people that are in areas that, for example, have a flood or have a fire or have an earthquake or have a famine of some sort, they have all co-created that, but on an unconscious level. None of these people are having a meeting saying something to the effect of, let's have a flood here. What's going on is that they have an unconscious desire for that. They don't know it any more than you fully know what's in your unconscious or I fully know what's in my unconscious mind. They've come in and they've attracted each other. We attract into groups based on what our mentality is, what our unconscious belief system is. So all of these people have gathered together in these areas and they do go through a victim mentality mindset. Part of this is for them to awaken from it and possibly to grow from it. And part of it is for us to awaken from it. If it's in our experience, you don't have to be in the flood to actually have the experience of it. You watch the news, you watch the media, you see it over the internet, and you realize that in some way, shape, or form, you co-created it. This goes back to what Dr. Hu Lin had taught me, that if it's in your experience, if you have something that you are complaining about, whatever the problem is, do you notice you're there, that you are always there? You're the common element. So when you hear about the earthquake or the fire or the flood or the breakdown or the terrorist, whatever it happens to be, and you note that you don't like that, you helped create that because it's in your reality. This is why constant cleaning is so important. This is why the self-identity Ho'oponopono was so important. If you really want to stop all of that from happening and change the world and change these disasters from taking place, you want to say, I'm sorry, I don't know what in my unconscious mind contributed to this taking place any more than those people did. Please forgive me for whatever I said, whatever I did, whatever energy I've given out to participate in this. Thank you for taking care of this, for healing it. And I love you. I love you. I love you. This is on all of us to do. Again, people have been victims. We've all played that role, but we were not doing it consciously. We've been doing it unconsciously. That's why awakening is crucial. That's the whole point.
I sense that some listeners could get outraged by your last suggestion. How dare you say that I created this flood? How dare you? There seems to be a sense of immediate wanting to fight back and make you the enemy. And there has to be some step within them where, I don't know if it's more compassion for themselves or for you, Is there some bridge between them being able to take responsibility, do the ho'oponopono, and immediately wanting to attack you and say, how dare you say I created this?
Yeah, that's a very good question and a very raw and honest question. The first response is the people that are immediately responding with anger. They don't like to hear that. They're upset with me for being the one who said that. Guess which stage they're coming from? Stage one, victimhood. How do I get them to cross over to the next stage? Well, I have to do it. Now, this is coming from a surrendered mindset. This is coming from the stage of surrendering to the divine and realizing that everything in my personal, Joe Vitale's personal experience, is being caused by what Joe Vitale is doing within himself. So if somebody is in my face saying that you are outrageous for making such a wild claim, I have to take a deep breath and realize some part of me agrees with them. And when I do, I look within myself and say, I have no idea which part is that. I have no idea why it's there. And I clean on it. I clear on it to remove it. As I do, those people don't show up in my experience. They might exist someplace on the planet and they might have that feeling, but they don't show up in my experience. Why not? Because I cleared it out. So I advise people to look at, how does it feel to be angry? How does it feel to be a victim? How does it feel to look at and send all of your rage and your energy outwards? A friend of mine once pointed out to somebody who was very upset all the time about politics and things that were going on in the political system, and that person was enraged by it. But that person was not a politician. That person was not in the government body. That person wasn't taking any action. And so my friend asked that person, whose energy system are you burning up when you feel that rage? Well, obviously, the person who was feeling the rage was destroying their own body, their own mind, their own lifestyle, their own happiness by feeling rage. So it's of no use. So I advise people to look at, maybe you're being a victim. Maybe you'd like to go into the second stage of awakening and be more empowered. And I look within myself to say what part of me has contributed to what I'm seeing, and I clean on it.
Thank you. Many of the questions I've asked, your response has been about falling into victimhood consciousness. I see a universe, a world, which has created a certain mindset within us. And it appears that this mindset is very different, perhaps, than that which the universe really holds. Can you share with me your insights on perhaps what are some of the misguidings that we follow as compared to the truth of the universe?
Well, the truth of the universe is there's nothing to be afraid of. That's one of the reoccurring themes in almost all the spiritual teachings, is that do not be afraid, fear not. And almost everybody that comes from a victim mentality or an ego mentality is afraid. They're afraid of everything. They're afraid of the next thing they're going to say, or what somebody's going to say to them, or the next turn down the street, the next job interview, whatever it happens to be. They're afraid. The universe basically says you are taken care of. There is nothing to be afraid of. We love you. At the essence, at the core, the divine, the universe itself is all love. That's the main discrepancy right there, is that the ego, the individual, thinks that they need to protect themselves, and the divine, the universe, is trying to say, drop the control, drop the protection, even drop your mind. And when you do, you're at this state of awakening where you are one with the divine, if not actually the divine itself.
There is a huge deluge of books right now, bestsellers, that are all about God doesn't exist and God is a fallacy to make us all feel secure and comfortable. What's your response to those?
Well, there's some truth to it, because there's a lot of beliefs about God and the divine that are actually man-made. I always love the Mark Twain quote where he said, the Bible says something to the effect of God was made in man's image. And he paused and said, I wonder who said that. Well, of course, it was man. So it's the ego extension trying to project out on what is God like? What is the divine like? Well, it's probably a lot like us. Well, that's the limits of our understanding. So when the scientific community looks at God as being a supreme being that has a long gray beard of some sort and some sort of image or visual that they're trying to track through the universe and they can't find it, it doesn't mean there isn't a divinity there. It doesn't mean that there isn't this supreme witness behind everything, including inside you, including inside those scientists. It means they're barking up the wrong tree. It means they're looking in the wrong area, and they're looking for something they actually will never find because they have the wrong description for what they're looking for.
I've heard two different trains of thoughts on accidents, illnesses. One of them is we take full responsibility. You run to the book and find out what the correlated emotion is with a certain organ that's dysfunctioning in the body, saying, okay, there's some kind of mental, emotional block I have which is creating this. Others get very upset and say, how dare you say I created this? Accidents happen. Injuries, cancer, disease happens. It's got nothing to do with my consciousness. What's your take on that?
Well, there's at least two ways to look at this. One is, if you come from the victimhood stage one phase of awakening, you will be outraged by it because you feel like accidents do happen and I'm just a victim of one of those accidents. But if you come from stage two, where you're empowered, you'll look a little deeper and go, maybe I did in some way, shape, or form attract this, create this, or welcome this. There are many stories of people who have actually had cancer or they were in a bad car accident or some sort of disaster took place and they were traumatized for a while, where they came out and said it was the greatest thing that ever happened to them. And they looked back and they thought, wow, I guess I attracted this so I would become a musician or I would go in a different route in my business or I would meet such and such person that I never would have met before. They found a positive reason for it and then they congratulated themselves for setting this up to happen. Now, it seems preposterous until you start reading stories about Lance Armstrong saying cancer was one of the greatest things that ever happened to him, and now he's a historic athlete. He's a legend in modern times, and he'll go down in history. But he was motivated by something that other people would have said it was absolutely horrible, and they would have been stopped in their tracks as long as they were still a victim and remained a victim. So you can look at it as the accident happened and I was a victim of it, and you can continue to be a victim. Or you can look at it as the accident happened and I actually participated in the creation of it, and I participated into turning it into something good, and I grew from it. As with most things in life, you have a choice about how you perceive them, and you have a choice with anything that you call an accident.
So the externals are what they are. It's our perceptions that make the difference.
The externals are absolutely what they are, but on a more divine perspective, you did attract them. I'm not dismissing the fact that you attracted these things. I'm suggesting that you have a choice in how you look at them. If you look at them as a victim, you will just push them as aside. You'll have some distance between them and you, and you won't actually learn from it, except that maybe you'll say, I won't go drinking when I go driving one night. But you can learn more than that, and you can see the deeper connection that on an unconscious level, you've created a little scene, a little act where an accident took place. But you created that scene, that act, that tragedy to learn something. And when you learn it, you grow.
As you discuss the four stages, I look forward and I pray that at some point I will be graced to be experiencing stage four. Is there a point then, for example, stage four, where you don't need any more books, you don't need any more tapes, you don't need any external guidance, that literally all the answers are from within you?
That's an interesting question. I'm not in stage four. I'm more of a journalist who's reporting on it. I know of it. I've had various Satori experiences that have given me glimpses into it. But I'm just like you. I'm still growing. I'm still evolving. I'm still becoming more and more aware. As I understand it, you will still want to read, watch TV, eat spaghetti, go dancing, have wonderful experiences. You're just doing it with a different level of awareness. You're still growing. You're still learning. It doesn't mean that you're suddenly the old wise computer that can answer every question about life or death. It means that you're still growing. You're still learning. You're still struggling in some respects, in some areas, but you're doing it with this deep level of trust. You're doing it with this deep understanding that you're playing a role in a cosmic drama, in a cosmic play, and you have fun with it at that point. Then you can laugh at virtually everything because you know that on some level you're detached from it. On some level you've created it because you're part of the divine, and on some level you know you're absolutely fine because when it's all over, you're just merging right back with the divine. So you don't stop learning. You don't just unplug your life. You're actually more plugged in to life at that stage, as I understand it.
I was just reminded with your last response of your great candor. I find it very refreshing and very humbling on your part to share, this is my journey. I'm on it with you. And you say it with great confidence, with a great sense of acceptance. I'm thinking of those who are on the journey stage one, stage two, where it's really tough to look at ourselves and to own and be responsible for those parts of ourselves that aren't where we'd like to be. How do you find the confidence to be able to declare it with a lot of love and compassion for the self?
Wow. Well, first of all, thank you for the compliment. And then second, I don't know any other way to be. I think that authenticity is part of the key of going through all of these stages. I think being totally honest with yourself is a way of going up in awakening. That if you lie to yourself at any stage, you won't grow because you're trying to deceive yourself. So when I openly say that I was homeless, or I openly say that I'm not awakened or enlightened, I'm actually stating it for myself and for the universe. I think at one point in my life, I realized that when I lied to anybody, I was lying to the universe, I was lying to the divine, and I was teaching it not to trust me. I was teaching it and myself not to trust myself. So that if I lied to you about wherever I was in my position in the world and my life and my struggles, if I lied to you and made it better than what it really was, and then I prayed to the universe, to God, to the divine, and said, please bring me such and such, or please help me with such and such, the divine would say, I don't know if you really want that or not, because you've already stated that you're not to be trusted. So for me, I've learned that total authenticity, right down to when it hurts, meaning that you tell the truth, it's like ruthless honesty. It's a little bit like some people have come to me and said, I don't know what I want. I don't know what to ask for. I don't know what I want to do with my life or be or act on. And I say, you're actually lying. You're lying to yourself and you're lying to me. That if you were ruthlessly honest with yourself, and I purposely say the word ruthlessly so you don't dodge even around the word honest, ruthlessly honest with yourself, you know in your heart what you've always longed to do. You've been afraid to speak it. Because as soon as you speak it, you have to take responsibility for not doing it. And that gets a little scary for a lot of people who are in the victim mentality. So for me, it begins with total authenticity. Be honest about who you are, what you're doing, what you're trying to achieve, what you're trying to attract, what you would like to experience in your life, where you are with your life. I think the universe respects that. I think other people respect that. And I think it helps you fall into line with the whole awareness process, the evolutionary process. Truth is king. Being ruthlessly honest is a spiritual quest.
That's very powerful. I've got a tricky one now for you.
Okay.
Denial. For example, one who is passive-aggressive. I recently heard from a psychologist that if you're passive-aggressive, you don't know that you are. So how does someone who doesn't know they are passive-aggressive or doesn't know they are in denial, that they've got such a thick skin of protection around them, ever begin to awaken?
That's a curious question because it's a person who's in victimhood who's about to be empowered. And I'm saying that because if they are denying who they are, what they want, their experiences, their problems, all of that, they are in the victimhood. They're saying they don't have to take control. They don't have to take responsibility. They're in some way, shape, or form dismissing all of it. Unfortunately, if you remember when you asked about those accidents that happen, an accident may happen to that kind of person. Something will jar them awake. And I'm almost reluctant to say it because I don't want to feel like I'm planning that as a suggestion. But I found more often than not that people who are not facing the shadow side of themselves, who are falling into denial, who are not admitting what they really want, at some point they hit what others call bottom. I really think that happened to me when I was homeless for so long, and people say, what woke you up to realize that you were modeling your life after destructive characters like Jack London and Ernest Hemingway? They were wonderful authors, but they weren't so great at their lifestyle. And I was modeling my life after them, so I was going down the tubes, so to speak. And I think what woke me up is that I hit bottom. I suddenly looked around and realized I'm sleeping in a toilet stall. I'm sleeping in a church pew. I am not happy. I am not succeeding. I am not getting anywhere. And I might have told everybody before that, coming from denial, that I'm an author. I'm going to get published. I am going to achieve great things. But there I was, homeless, in poverty. I think that an awakening comes because your unconscious mind says, as long as you're going to be asleep, we're going to do something to bring you awake. that's when you start to go into stage two. I'd rather have you go into stage two because of this program, because of a movie like The Secret, or books by my friends John Assaroff or Lisa Nichols or Jack Canfield or Bob Proctor, any of these wonderful souls, so that you don't have to have a painful awakening, that you can actually have an easy one.
So the good news is, for those listening, they're already here. If they listen to the program with the sense of, oh, that's Joe, my brother, oh, there's such and such, my sister, oh, there's my boss, and don't actually listen to the words and the teachings that you have and look at themselves and go, oh, there I am, that perhaps they re-listen to the program and keep triggering back to the self until they get that they are responsible for their lives.
I would agree. And it's a good point to realize that if people have this program in their hands, if you're listening to this right now, it means that you've passed the victimhood. You're actually empowering yourself, because listening to the Awakening Course is an empowering experience. You had to actually raise your hand and say, I want to be awake. I want to grow. I want to go to the next level. So congratulations. That has to be a good feeling. Feeling is that you've left victimhood and you are empowered and becoming more empowered.
I guess another area as far as not seeing or denial. I think in our society we have a lot of addictions that are generally accepted. Addiction to television, a sexual addiction, addiction to computers, ways that people can avoid living or avoid their problems and immerse themselves in these things. Addiction to eating or exercise, things that are often perceived as a good thing, can be overdone.
Absolutely. I also want to point out that there was a book by William Glasner called Positive Addiction, and there is such a thing as positive addiction. Running, working out, for example, those can be considered positive addictions. Now, if you're doing them to the extent that you don't show up at work or you're not paying any attention to your family, it's probably a negative addiction. You're probably taking it a little too far in one direction. Balance is the key. I really feel that addiction is another form of being a victim, that you're trying to overcompensate in some painful area. There's something you don't want to face. There's something you don't want to do, and you found a way to escape. An addiction could be TV, it could be eating, it could be exercise, it could be smoking, it could be any number of things that you know is harmful to you. I am a great believer in getting help when you need it. I've started a Miracles Coaching program that I think you know about. And in the Miracles Coaching program, people get encouragement, they get support, they get information, they get inspiration. I have found that I've made the greatest leaps in my life by having a personal coach. Coaching, of course, was very popular in the athletic area. Baseball players, football players, they all have coaches. But now people in business have coaches. People in relationships have coaches. People with wine collections have coaches. There's all kind of coaches for all kind of people. If somebody feels like they are addicted to something and they're not being able to break it off by themselves, I say raise your hand and get help. There is nothing wrong with that. Throughout my career, one of my secrets to success has been whenever I came across the bump in the road and I couldn't get myself out, I know a lot of different clearing techniques. I know a lot of different ways to make myself feel better. But if I'm still feeling stuck and I still feel like, oh, I'm addicted to this problem or this person or this substance, whatever it happens to be, or a nagging problem just won't go away, I know to call help. And I have my own miracles coaches. I have my own miracles coaches that I will call. So I encourage people to ask for help. Don't try to be a lone ranger. I tried to do that for a long time, and you cannot succeed all by yourself, not easily anyway.
The wonder of coaching I have found is that you have somebody to answer to and to be accountable to.
And many of
us consider ourselves highly disciplined, but you up the ante when you have a coach who is compassionate, who hears, but who calls you on your stuff and asks you, what are you going to bring me next week? What have you got?
Yes, I think that's very important. Accountability is a big thing. If you know that next Monday you're going to be talking to your coach and the coach is going to ask you, did you work out 3 times a week? Did you work on your novel? Did you open your business or write a business plan? You're more likely to do it than if you didn't have a coach. Now, some people are disciplined and they can get it done, but I find when you have a coach that you actually do more, you're more accelerated in your progress. And you are happier about it because you got somebody to share it with, somebody who's urging you on and rooting you on. There's a cheerleader in your corner. So having a coach is a big secret to success.
Well, and how often do you get a captive listener who is literally totally focusing on you?
Exactly.
And totally loving you and encouraging you.
So yes, that's priceless.
Yes. I'm also wondering as far as experiencing versus knowing. I'm sure many of the listeners may have listened to several programs and read several books. They know this material. They haven't experienced it yet. And it's a big difference. I struggle with that myself.
Yes, knowing and experiencing are two different things. When I talked about meditation, for example, you may have shook your head and said, oh, I've meditated before. But if I talked about meditation in the marketplace where you walk through your day and you're actually meditating as you're working, you're meditating as you're breathing, you're just conscious of what's going on, you can have a different experience. It's the difference between reading a recipe for a particular dessert and actually eating the dessert. Eating the recipe itself is not very fulfilling, but eating the dessert might be actually very yummy for you. So I have a intellectual understanding of the fourth stage of awakening, but I don't have it as an experiential experience. I actually have moments of it, and I relish those moments and I welcome more, but I know that I have to keep working. So I still meditate every day. I still do the gratitude moments every day. I still do the self-identity Ho'oponopono every day, and in fact, almost every minute, because I know there's so much work to be done, and the more I do it, the more I prep myself for the awakening, the enlightenment, the Satori, whatever it happens to be next. But knowing on an intellectual level isn't enough. It prepares you for what's to come, but it's only one step in that direction. It's not the final step.
Now, you talk about it as being work, and yet I know as you say work, it brings in great joy.
Yes.
Can you share your insights with that, Anna?
Well, that's a great question, because when I say work, I don't mean work the way most people mean it. Most people that go to a 9-to-5 job and they complain about it, they consider that to be work. But I am a very prolific and productive individual. I've written maybe 30 books. I've got a couple different audio programs, many different DVDs, a home study course, a miracles coaching program, an executive mentoring program, all kind of seminars that I do, speaking engagements I do, a blog that I'm actively working on. I'm involved in the social media sites. I have a Twitter and Facebook and MySpace, and the list goes on. And people wonder, how do you do so much work? Well, it's not work. It's fun. I'm smiling to think about it because I really look forward to writing. I really look forward to participating. I really look forward to moments like this when I get to share what I've discovered for other people who are eager to learn from it and to grow from it. I just can't wait to keep doing it. So it's not work. It's activity, but it's an activity that is so exhilarating and so joyful that I can't stop from doing it. So I might have used the word, and occasionally still use the word, work. But it's because I'm getting things done. It's just a phrase and a definition. But it doesn't have the emotional baggage or the emotional connotation that it might for somebody out there who doesn't like their work. I like my work. It's my play.
Well, I also get, sitting across from you here, the energy that you exude. Clearly, it energizes you. It's your passion. You're in the zone, and therefore effort sounds like it's something of the past.
Well, you're absolutely right. For the most part, effort is something of the past. I do my best to only do the things that are fun for me to do. And if there's something that needs to be done that I don't think is fun, for example, my taxes, I find an accountant who thinks it's fun, and I give it to them. And so in this way, I circulate wealth. I keep everybody happy. And this is really how the world works. We all play different parts. What's fun for me may not be fun for you. What's fun for the accountant may not be fun for me or you. But we find the people who enjoy the roles that need to be done, and we employ them to do them. And they, in turn, employ us to do what we do. In that way, we follow our calling, and the world works.
That brings about another question. Something I recently heard from a spiritual teacher is when you're repulsed by something, you're done with it. It's over. This is contrary to a lot of the teachings I've heard, which is if you're repulsed by something, there's something in there for you, something you don't want to look at within yourself. And yet when I heard when you're repulsed with something, when you're deeply repulsed, you're done. And that made me feel a sense of, oh, that felt right and that felt good, but there's a real conflict there. What are your views on this?
Well, I don't understand the first one at all. When you're repulsed by something, you're done doesn't make any sense to me. Because in my world, the way I understand how the world works, when you're repulsed by something, it's a reflection that you have the very thing that's upsetting you in you. You may have it as a judgment, you may have it as a quality, but it's pushing a button within you. I think it's good news to find something that's upsetting to you or repulsing to you because you get to clear it. When you clear it within yourself by loving it, finding out what the belief is behind it, by clearing or cleansing it, at that point, you're free from it. You'll go and maybe find the same thing that repulsed you one day, and after cleaning it, you'll see it again, and it will mean nothing to you. It'll be like reading a story in a book. It'll have no energy, no negativity to it. You'll be clear of it. But to be repulsed and be done with it, I don't know what that means.
So that's the point of unconditional love, where literally you've cleared everything so nothing triggers you. Nothing creates an anger or frustration. There's compassion in your response.
I love that. Unconditional love, I think, if anything, is our goal. You know, unconditional love of every aspect of your life and everything that you look around, if you can look at it, and no matter what it is, say that it's love. It came from God. It came from the divine. And you have no judgment on it. You're at an awakened place. You must be awakened at that point, as far as I'm concerned. If you can look and see a cockroach and go, I love it. Or you can look and see something that repulsed you in the past and go, I can see why I love that. I can see what its value is and the positivity in it, how it's serving everything. When you get to that point where you are unconditionally accepting everything, accepting all in your life, you are at a point that is, if not enlightened, right next door to it.
That brings up the subject of forgiveness. Do you know forgiveness, from what I've heard, doesn't sell in the self-help world? There is such a reluctance we have to forgive, knowing that energetically I'm depleting myself by not forgiving and yet still struggling to forgive.
Wow, I'm so glad you brought that up. Forgiveness is probably one of the most powerful clearing and cleansing techniques there is, and I did not talk about it on the earlier parts of the session. So thank you for bringing that up. We need to address that. My rule of thumb is if you have a block anywhere in your life, it's probably because you have not forgiven yourself or somebody involved that's related to that block. Very often we have done things in the past that we regret. We said something, we did something. You know, when we're young, we all make mistakes. When we're growing up, we still do. Most of us don't forgive ourselves. We hold on to that and we beat ourselves up. Very often we beat ourselves up unconsciously. Forgiving yourself, forgiving others is the most powerful thing you can do to free your energy. When you haven't forgiven yourself or somebody else in your life, you're still carrying around the past. You know yourself from the earlier sessions in this program that if you are not in this moment, you're actually in the past or in the future. And if you haven't forgiven somebody, including yourself, you're still in the past. You're carrying around the charge, the energy, the mindset, the beliefs, the grudge, the regretfulness, whatever it happens to be. You must forgive. I don't care if it's not big in the self-help market. I don't care what they think about that, because I know it to be the single most dramatically influential thing that you can do is to actually take an inventory. It might even be something worth writing about in the workbook. Find a place to write about it in there, or find a journal to write about it, and list all the things that happened, and then go and forgive everybody involved. In fact, what comes to mind as I'm thinking right now out loud and ad-libbing in front of you, in an earlier section of this course, when I was talking about being a victim, I asked you to go to your workbook and make a list of all the times when you felt like you had been a victim. That is a wonderful list to go through now and forgive everybody involved. Now, that might be a tall order, but you can just kind of eat away at it and do it a little bit every day. And you're saying to people that were involved, I'm sorry. I forgive you. I forgive myself. I forgive everybody involved. You might even do the self-identity Ho'oponopono. Feel what you're feeling and ask the divine to help you forgive. Please forgive me. I'm sorry. Thank you. I love you. I think this is the bonus tip from the divine here, that if you actually want to take care of all the blocks in your past so you are free to move forward without any baggage, go back and forgive yourself and everybody involved. That is probably, as I take a deep breath and think about this, an astonishingly wonderful, transformative thing for you to do. Forgive yourself and all others. And radical forgiveness means you realize that nothing bad ever even happened. That's radical forgiveness. When you get to the mindset, again with unconditional love, realizing that nothing bad happened. I actually see that it was actually good. I actually see that I grew from it, or they grew from it, or we transformed because of it. When you get to the point where you realize that nothing bad happened, you are free. You are free.
That's a wonderful insight. The point when you were speaking where I was thinking, I'm so struggling to forgive this person, and then I'm so beating myself up for not being able to forgive, knowing the energy I'm losing. If I just do, I'm sorry, please forgive me, to the divine and to myself, that I'm not willing to let this go, and just keep clearing that in and of itself.
You're asking for help is what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And that's a very wise thing to do. If you do feel like you're stuck and you can't ask for forgiveness of yourself or for somebody else for whatever reason, you can turn to the divine and in a prayerful way say, this is bigger than what I can handle. Please help me with it. Please forgive me. I'm sorry. Thank you. I love you. And actually do the process on the very feeling of not being able to forgive. Let the divine help you. What I've learned is that the divine will answer if you ask.
And we just don't ask enough, do we?
No, we don't.
Well, Joe, thank you so much. There's many, many more questions, but there will also be many, many more programs, I'm sure.
Well, let me leave you with a thought. Dr. Hu Len, who I've talked about and we co-authored the book Zero Limits, says questions are simply from the mind, and that if you actually let them come and let them go, you are one step closer to the divine.
This concludes the Awakened Relationship.